Hello and welcome to episode 83 of Blast Processing, the official podcast of PixelVerdict.com, as opposed to the unofficial podcast of PixelVerdict.com, which we won't speak of here. With me this week are John Mercer.
Snakes. Did you say snakes?
And Adam Arsenault.
Actually, the unofficial podcast is just me with a tape recorder in the bathroom.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the name? What's it called?
I shouldn't have started this conversation. I take it back. Let's pretend I never said that.
It's called the unofficial podcast of PixelVerdict.com.
It's just Adam sitting in his toilet reading the opening narrative from Nowhere Man over and over again.
My name is Thomas Veal. Yep. I took a photograph.
But I do it, but because I'm in the bathroom, I do it while I'm screaming at the top of my lungs.
The tape recorder's in the next room, so it sounds really
cool. Okay, so it's Gerard Butler filming a remake of Nowhere Man.
Okay.
My name is Thomas Veal!
We're going into dark territory.
Steven Seagal's Under Siege dark territory?
No. What is this a video game podcast?
I don't know.
Is this the right night of the week? I'm so confused. I'm going to kick things off. Adam has an exciting announcement, don't you, Adam?
Sure.
About your new toy?
Oh, I have a computer. It works now. I have current generation technology for a PC, which is amazing.
Okay, so appease all us gearheads. Do you have a stat sheet in front of you? Can you regale us with tales of your specs?
Oh Lord, no! But there are words and then there are numbers beside it, but I can play proper games. You know what I mean? Which is very exciting.
Can you run Crisis on medium to high settings?
Well, but I could probably run Crisis, period.
Well, hey!
Which in of itself is a technical triumph for a laptop.
That actually is something to brag about.
Yeah, I mean, I had a laptop in which Minecraft would crash it. So, wow. You know.
This spells the end of Adam Arsenault's World of Warcraft addiction.
Well, it's funny. Here I am. I'm playing World of Warcraft on my old laptop, and I'm like, is anybody else getting 5 frames per second? Everyone's like, no. I'm like, oh, it's just me then.
Now he's going to load it up on his new laptop. This looks like an old boot.
it's very nice now. I'm looking forward to, catching up on some things now.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on the new addition to your family.
Yeah, a friend of mine had a kid. Who cares about that?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I got a computer.
What'd you name your new computer?
Oh, I don't think I'm going to be doing that, John.
Oh, come on.
Your computer's name is Charlene.
Charlene.
I didn't mind the suggestion for the Viper sound effects, but I don't know about the naming it.
You need to do either an Army of Darkness or Big Trouble in Little China custom sound scheme now.
Jeez.
Every time there's new email in your inbox, have Lopan going, indeed!
What, like it doesn't already, right?
Yeah, well, hey, there you go. That's the sign of a true geek when you have...
What? I said your damn words!
Sign of a true geek is either having like a custom sound effect or naming your computer something like HAL 9000 or Tron.
Yeah, I won't be doing that.
Okay.
I did buy a laptop. It's not like I bought a, water-cooled, rig in my basement with fluorescent lights.
My laptop's...
That I did not.
My laptop's computer name is Beaster with a U.
Beaster with a U.
Anyway. I'm also pretty sure your laptop came from Cybertron.
I don't know. I think it scares the cats at night, though. Because for some reason, even when it's closed, like when the screen is down and in standby mode, every so often you'll hear some crazy female voice go, "Virus definition has been updated," in like extremely high volume. So then you hear cats fleeing throughout the house.
Does it still glow eerily when the top is closed?
It's like a pulsating light.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think there might even be like a smog machine or something built into it.
Nice.
It's a spooky machine. So, Adam, you haven't been with us for a few weeks. What's new in video game land? Have you been playing anything?
Not so much. No? Yeah, I wish I could. My wife is bugging me to buy that new Kirby game, which I have not done yet. But
good man, good man.
It's, you know, cute, I guess. It's, you know, about yarn, which is nice, I guess.
Really?
I don't know. It looks fun, you know?
In that
genial Nintendo gameplay kind of way where it's like I remember putting an embarrassing amount of time into playing that, like, Princess Peach game for the DS.
Oh, yeah, the one that was, I believe people said was like a dumbed-down Mario or something?
Yeah, and it was exactly that. And yet, it wasn't, once you got playing it, it wasn't that bad.
It was Mario for girls.
It was Mario for girls. And I think I bought it for my wife, and she kind of looked at it and said, that's fine. And then she didn't play it. And so I'm like, well, somebody's got to play it.
Hey, man, there was good money spent on this. There was coin that's dropped right. on this game.
That's right.
There are children starving in the world who would love to play Princess Peach.
To play Princess Peach, that's right.
They could be eating that for dinner right now.
There are kids with original spinach green colored Game Boys who would love to play this game.
But you've got to give it to that kind of, you know, Nintendo demographic game where even if it doesn't appeal to your, you know,
your
sensibilities,
your basic
the game
instincts.
Yeah, the gameplay is usually solid enough that you can get some entertainment out of it.
I suppose. I mean, Blair had nothing but good stuff to say about it last week, so, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He can keep playing Kirby's Epic Yarn. I'll stick with my Gothic 4.
Yeah, but they could do the Gothic 4 in, like, yarn style.
No.
It's the new cell shading.
Yeah, according to Penny Arcade.
I know.
How about you, John? You been playing anything new this week?
Yes, I have.
Really?
Vanquish.
Ooh, Vanquish.
Holy screaming awesome. I was all like, zoom! And then the commie bots were all like, crush, kill, destroy. So I was like, all like, nuh-uh. And then they were like, yuh-huh. And then it was like, ambush, pew, pew, pew. And then our rocket slid under a big robot's legs, combat rolled, and took out his sniper buddy up on the mezzanine. Then I dove around his cannon fire and his flamethrower and shot off his fuel tank with a heavy machine gun. And there was this huge explosion, and I turned and walked away from it cold as ice, and it was all in slow-mo. And that was before I had to save the Colonial Marines from a transforming killdozer that carried a big double-sided battle staff that had a chainsaw on one end and a Vulcan cannon on the other.
This sounds like the greatest game ever.
Pure, unmistakable, radical.
I just, right there. I love the storyline. I love how it's, you know, it's, oh my god, the Russian commie bots are attacking the United States, but President Crazy Bitch will have none of that on her watch.
President Joan Allen.
President Joan Crazy Bitch.
Crazy Bitch.
what I'm loving so much about the storyline is that it's everyone is jaw-dropped that the Soviets possibly have another prototype suit like Sam is wearing.
Okay.
These guys just dropped a flying battleship. Okay, a flying battleship the size of Manhattan. That transformed into a big walking crab tank with a cannon on it big enough to blow a hole in the sun. And they're worried that the Russian bad guy's got another slow motion suit.
I love this game.
Every boss in this game, I am dying a total of 20 times at until eventually you get, because every time you die, ammo cases in the area totally randomizes what's in them.
Oh, okay.
Right? Unless there's one's got a specialized weapon, like you're going to need a sniper rifle, so of course there'll be one there that has a sniper rifle in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm dying at these bosses and I keep opening it up and it's like, you know, they'll have the kind of like the Halo alien weapons, so there'll be like an EMP gun or a disc launcher in there. I'm like, I don't need that, just top me up with my heavy machine gun. Come on, I got the thing leveled up to like level 20. I can.
That's pretty much the only weapon I used in it too, actually.
I can explode robot heads, no problem. Yeah, dude, my weapons loadout never changes from the heavy machine gun, the assault rifle, and the sniper rifle.
Right.
That's all I use. I don't, like, even the shotgun. The shotgun is lethal at close up, close range, so is the heavy machine gun.
Right on.
Right?
Anything else?
Actually, yeah, I, it was kind of funny, you know, last week when I first started playing Vanquish, I was a little bit upset because I was sitting there with my copy of Vanquish in my hand watching my wife play Kirby's Epic Era.
Oh.
Because Blair said it was good. Dude, do you want to know something? Listen, I've never been a big fan of Kirby. And it's like, yeah, so Kirby was it's just like Princess Peach. It was dumbed down Mario. It was always an easy platformer meant for kids.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This one here, you can't even die in the game. All you do is he goes throughout games and he picks up little colored beads and everything. It's kind of like the rings in Sonic. You get hit, he drops like 32 of them. You can go pick them up, right?
Okay.
Pick them up again. But I mean, there's no penalty for dying, and it doesn't even have, like, I remember you saying last week how New Super Mario Brothers played just like Mario 3 and just like Mario World, and I snorted in disgust.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Kirby's Epic Yarn even lacks the frantic sense of that Mario game. I mean, at least that was still fast-moving.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that was still a pretty crazy platformer. Yes, it played like something that came out in 1991, but it was something that came out in 1991 that kicked ass. But it, Kirby's Epic Yarn was way too slow for me. Elizabeth lost interest a few levels into it, and we promptly returned it back to the video store.
Okay, right on. So it wasn't.
It's the graphics are in it are gorgeous, and you know, I gotta give credit where credit is due. With you know, Nintendo always have that type of aesthetic with their level design. It's charming to a fault, but it's just not for me, and I can't. Like Steve, it's something I'd recommend to you to get for Abigail.
Yeah.
Right, it's the type of game a 7-year-old girl would devour.
She's got her Viva Pinata, man. She's fine with that.
Even Abby might be too. She might be a little too advanced for that, because I'm pretty sure, you know, in the game she's playing now, there still is penalty for failure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you got to call the doctor and have him come over and either heal your sick pinatas or just destroy them.
Yeah.
So you know, but, I mean, she has to choose whether or not to sacrifice them or to spend some money on some healthcare. So I guess it's like having a toddler in the United States, you know, you basically can either call the doctor when they get sick or sacrifice them to save a few dollars.
Well, your toddler.
Worst thing we've ever said.
Oh, man, that's a new bobsled. That is a new bobsled. But, yeah, man, it's far too easy and, you know, charming level design and cute, unique-looking graphics will only carry you so far.
Right on.
That's to me anyway. I mean, I'm in my late 20s, guys. You know, I.
You're not a 7-year-old girl.
Yeah, exactly.
You kind of sound like a 7-year-old girl.
I got my hair braided like a 7-year-old girl too. If only I had that much hair.
If we're lucky, it's the hair on your head.
Maybe oh.
Human hair.
If we're lucky, it's your hair.
I said it every morning, man, when I'm brushing Abby's hair before she goes to school. I'm like, you want to trade hair with Daddy? No.
Man. She's not even amused by it anymore.
That's just not fair.
No. But, it'd be a great game for kids. I mean, parents looking for a decent Christmas gift for, the, you know, their Wii-owning child. Yes, that's, by all means, go for it. Any other gamer getting into it, it's a high 2 out of 5, a 3 out of 5 at best. It's a slow-paced, narcoleptic platformer.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, boss.
This is why I pretty much haven't gotten to buy it.
Yeah. You get to these bosses who every attack in the game is really, really telegraphed, so you can dodge everything with absolutely no problem. And I suppose I'm ruined now because I'm used to, in Vanquish, fighting a robot the size of a skyscraper with a huge cannon in his chest.
Well, you know, that tends to hurt your... Yeah. I'd say. Let's go with that.
Anything you want to play anything, Steve?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Adam. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, you know, it's funny. I just realized that I'm a total liar. I have actually played a new game.
Hey!
And it was right around the time where we were talking about, you know, human hair.
Uh-oh.
But there's a segue to it. Super Scribblenauts.
Oh, great.
Oh, good.
I've been wanting to hear something about this.
You have adjectives.
I don't understand.
Okay, so the thing with
Explain how an adjective works.
Okay. In the history of Pixel Verdict,
if I've reviewed two games, it's a miracle. Because, you know, I never get them in time to be relevant, you know?
Okay.
Where I'm like, you know, I'm like, I'll pick up a game and I'm like, ooh, Gears of War. You know, I'm like way behind all the time. So I did review the original Scribblenauts.
You did. I remember.
I did. And I really liked it, but it was, you quickly hit your head against the logical wall because it was as clever and as open-ended as they wanted to make it.
Yeah.
The game, the mechanics were just very restrictive because it got very grammatically nitpicky about what you could do and what you couldn't do.
Yeah.
Well, they've really tried to address that in this game by kind of opening every word up to modification via adjectives. So you could say mustache, and a little mustache would appear. You could put it on your character, or throw it, or do whatever you wanted with it.
Okay.
But if you said giant robot zombie mustache, what you would get would be a gigantic robotic flying mustache that would attack you. Which is the human hair segue, because I spent like 20 minutes.
Steve, take back what you said. Take back what you said about Vanquish being the greatest game ever.
I gotta admit. I mean, you can do some pretty wild things right off the bat. So you can be like purple flying bathtub, and then that's exactly what you've just created. Wow. So it's pretty cool because you can have a lot more fun doing it that way, where you know you can create, you know, colored things. You can create, you know, fiery or ice things or poison things or zombie things or robot things.
So instead of like just saying, you know, Abe Lincoln and then minigun, you could say giant Abe Lincoln with minigun?
Yes. Well, what you'd have to do is you'd have to say giant Abe Lincoln and then a gigantic Abe Lincoln would appear. And then you have to create a minigun and hand it to him.
And then say tiny Cthulhu?
Yes, absolutely.
And then have the tables turn. Giant Abe Lincoln can just step on tiny Cthulhu.
Yep. And you can assign people, so like if you draw Cthulhu, Cthulhu is angry that you've summoned him from the dark recesses of the world, and he attacks you. But if you say friendly Cthulhu, he's very pleasant, and you can ride him around.
He wakes from deep Ryla well rested.
Yeah, and instead of destroying humanity when the stars are right, he has a picnic.
Yeah.
He gets up and he makes us French toast.
He still dines on human flesh, but, you know, it's a picnic instead of a holocaust.
So some of the new puzzle designs where they'll put objects in a room where, you know, they'll put a polar bear and a, you know, I don't know, an abominable snowman, and they'll say, you know, create a third, you know, creature that shares similar properties.
Oh, okay.
So you know, so you end up having to pick things that are white, or things that are ice related, or things that are happy, or sad, or cold, or on fire, or whatever. You know, so it's pretty neat. At the end of the day, it's still the same game. You're still going to hit your head against that wall where you're frustrated because you're not quite sure what it wants you to do to move to the next level.
You're not sure if you're as smart as, you know, the guys who made the game.
Yeah. But just playing in sort of the sandbox mode where you just start the game up and you can just draw things and remove things is still endlessly entertaining.
So it's still the same developers, I guess. Is it still Fourth Cell?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure if they had come
fifth
back.
Fifth Cell, isn't it?
Or Fifth Cell.
Yeah, Fifth Cell, yeah.
Fifth Cell, yeah, sorry, my bad. And you call yourself a game journalist! Jesus!
And they redid the controls, which was the other real sticky point.
Yeah, that was kind of a pain in the hole.
Right. Where now you can pick between the stylus controls, which nobody would, or the D-pad. So you can just use the D-pad to move and jump around.
Well, I may have to look into this, because I did have a little bit of fun with Scribblenauts.
Yeah, if someone like me who picked up the original Scribblenauts and really, really wanted to enjoy it, but, you know, was kind of put off by the controls and like you said earlier, the kind of closed-minded, closed-ended... design, yeah, and everything of it, I'd probably get a kick out of this one.
If Fifth Cell had waited and created the game today, and this was the game, everybody would have loved it. Like it would have been a fantastic success.
Not that the first one wasn't, but it would have been more of a success.
The first one rode a wave of buzz and hype, and then when people played it, they said it's good, but, you know.
This is true. I think what John said is kind of right. People wanted to like it a lot more than they actually did like it.
This is the version of the game that they should have released the first time. It isn't groundbreaking or different or anything. It's really like the patch.
Okay. So it's kind of like one of the games I played this week.
Yeah.
Segway.
I don't know about that. Well, no, if Adam is done, then we can segue.
Take it. I love a good segue.
And this is Segway. Sloppiest segue ever. I did spend about 2.5, maybe 3 hours with Fable 3 over the weekend.
Oh, see, now I'm interested in hearing about this.
It's good.
Good.
It is good. And that is coming from someone who... I had the conversation with someone today at work. Someone came in and bought a copy today at work. And we talked a lot about Fable 2. And he said he kind of bypassed Fable 2 altogether for no reason other than at the time he was really busy at university and yada, yada, yada. But I kind of said, you know, words cannot describe the soul-crushing hatred that I feel for Fable 2. And he's like, really? Hatred? That strongly? And then I stopped and I thought about it. I was like, okay, you know what? No, I can't use the word hatred. Soul-crushing disappointment that I felt for Fable 2.
My father doesn't hate me.
He's disappointed. But yeah, and like Fable 2 felt like a big, huge-ass melting pot of ideas that were just all kind of thrown onto a disc. It felt like, you know, the unfinished version of a game that a developer goes around to magazines and websites with to show off. That's what Fable 2 felt like to me, you know? Like, you know, like, this is what we can do in our game. But it's not really all put together properly yet, you know? Like, that's kind of what it felt like. Whereas Fable 3 feels like, you know, like, all the ideas and concepts that Molyneux and company wanted to bring into Fable 2, they all kind of coalesce into a single whole now, you know? It's like, you know, when you make Jell-O chocolate pudding, and you try to eat it right out of the blender or whatever, and it's really, really soft and runny, but you got to put it in the fridge for a little while and let it get a little firmer, you know? Then it then it tastes better. But that's my analogy for Fable 3. It's, I mean, graphically, technically, it's still not, you know, it's far from a showpiece as far as what the 360 is capable of. It's still a half-ugly game, but it's got a neat little style to it. Controls are still, like, you know, compared to Fable 1, it's pretty pedestrian. There's still only one attack button. The magic system's been simplified a fair bit. It's, I mean, you know, it's Fable 2, but it has an interesting premise, unlike Fable 2. It has a more of, I guess, a video gamey feel instead of, like, you know, a Sims type of feel. Like, Fable 2, just to me, the game didn't really have any kind of narrative drive or any kind of, you know, through way that you could ride. It was just kind of roam around and play around with emotes and watch everybody's opinion of you raise or decrease depending on what you're doing, you know? Whereas Fable 3 is more, it's more along the same lines as the original Fable. Like, they really give you a narrative pull, they really kind of set things up, and it's really cool what they've got done, you know? It's not really a spoiler when I say that during the first half of the game, you're raising an army to start a revolution, and then the second half of the game, you're actually the ruler. Now, I mean, I haven't gotten to the second half of the game. I've only played for about 3 hours. But from what I understand it, you know, you set up your revolution, you raise your army of freedom fighters, you make certain promises to the populace and that sort of thing, and then in the second half is where you kind of either put up or shut up, you know?
Break every promise.
Yeah, either break every promise and turn into a total douchebag or, you know, make good to your people and become like a legendary ruler. And of course, I know one little twist that I won't reveal here, but there are definitely a few curveballs that get thrown at you in the run of running your kingdom of Albion, you know? But it's Fable. It definitely feels like Fable, but it feels like a finished Fable. It feels like a tight, fun gameplay experience. And the one thing that I really loved about Fable 2, the dog is back and just as well done as he was in Fable 2. So, you know, I'm happy about that. That part of the game always kind of appealed to me, and they did a good job on that, you know. But yeah, it's good. It's definitely not horrible, and it's full of British voice actors who are very, very funny.
So, question.
Yo.
My wife was completely addicted to the first Fable.
Yep.
And couldn't be bothered by the second one. Don't buy her Fable 3. Like, will I, if I get a new Xbox 360, will I lose it because of Fable 3?
It's possible. I see that the potential definitely exists. more so than it did in the first one. But the other side of that, I think what, and I mean, Sarah was the same. Sarah played the hell out of Fable. Sarah finished Fable before I did. And she had, like, you know, like where she you start as a child and you kind of grow up and see all these events happen to you, and like you get that narrative pulling. And I mean, like Fable 2, they tried to do the same thing, but as soon as you became an adult in Fable 2, all of the focus went out the window. The game just became wandering around aimlessly. And I think with Fable 3, they don't have the kiddie stuff at the beginning. Like, you don't start as a child, so that, like, you don't see your character grow up as such, which is different. But at the same time, like, I do really like how they kind of start in a more traditional RPG fashion. Like, you do get this really cool storyline at the beginning, and this one particular event happens that you're kind of like, oh my god, I can't believe they just went there. That's just, wow, you know? But it was pretty cool. It was like, I mean, it hooked me, and I don't know if, like, Sarah or Beth would take to it the same way, because you don't have the kid stuff at the beginning and that. You don't have that, like, kind of youthful innocence thing to pull you into the game and, like, to appeal to, I guess, to the feminine side, you know?
The feminine side.
Yeah, but...
feminine side. Yeah. She was a chicken punter, Steve.
Yeah, but... Well, okay, yeah, okay. You're a girl. Your wife plays hockey and loves horror movies, so, you know.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay. Don't buy it, because she probably will play it obsessively. I don't know. The other thing, though, I think the other big appeal to the original Fable was the good and evil. Like, you know, how your character could be so drastically different in appearance and stuff based on your actions, and that kind of got toned down a lot in Fable 2. And Fable 3 seems to be kind of the same way again. Fable 3 doesn't seem to really be playing that side of the game up very much.
I remember a gamer buddy of ours being crushingly disappointed because his evil character couldn't have a top hat and a twirly mustache.
Oh, that was Dobbin. Yes, John Dre was very unhappy about that.
Yeah. Yeah,
did he ever get to tie a winch to a or tie a marm to a train track in Red Dead though?
He did. Yes, yeah, he did. Okay, he was very happy.
Probably make it up to him.
And he apparently he sat there the whole time going while his train was bearing down on her. So.
Great. I'll get you for this, Skeletor.
Yeah, all I remember, I haven't played Fable, the original Fable, in quite a while. All I remember is a buddy of mine and I got it at the same time, and we said, oh, let's play it. And like 2 weeks later, we kind of compared notes.
Yeah.
And my character looked like Obi-Wan Kenobi from Phantom Menace.
Nice.
So he'd like flowing white robes with an angelic glow and a little beard and everything, and everybody was just like, oh, hello. And I was like, so how's your game going? And he's just like, check it out, I just murdered my 17th wife. I sacrificed him at a shrine. And I look over, and he looks like the devil, like Tim Curry from Legend. Like horns growing out of his
cliff feet.
Wasn't that what you and yours and like Sarah's was like, I remember your guy had the like ethereal golden armor.
Oh, my guy was like, he was huge, he was built like a tank. And he was wearing
butterflies and flowers used to bloom around him.
Yeah, and he had you know, like a halo, and he looked like a juggernaut, like he looked like some kind of golem or something. But Sarah's was you know this cloven hoof.
Like
yeah, she was pretty dastardly.
Pot-bellied.
Yeah, but I mean, Fable 2. We got so excited before Fable 2 came in. I bought two copies of that goddamn game because Sarah had an Xbox at the time too. And we were so excited because they talked about co-op and couch co-op. And, you know, we were like, oh, great, we can, you know, we can each start a character and we can get into each other's games and blah, blah, blah. But, of course, none of that happened. None of that came to realization. And that is in Fable 3. You can import your own character into another person's game and share the game world and all that kind of stuff, which is great, which is fantastic. I'm glad they delivered on that, but I'm kind of thinking it might be too little too late. The only other thing I played this week, and I played a lot of it, was Arcania Gothic 4.
Get it out of your system now, boyo.
Oh, it's fantastic. It is such a great game. I don't understand why review scores were so low for it. I really don't. Well, I guess IGN's review was a fair score, a 7.5, I think it was. And I can understand that, but like seeing GameSpot give it a 5, it's like, no, man, this is not a 5 game. It's a damn fun piece of work. No one's really familiar with the old Gothic series but me, so I won't get too heavy into it. But it's open world, it's RPG, it's kind of Oblivion-esque, They've added a lot of gameplay aids to it. They've made it a lot more accessible than the old Gothic games, where the old Gothic games were on the same, you know, parallel as Morrowind, a game where, you know, you get missions, but there's no journal, there's no map or quest objectives to follow, there's no compass, there's no nothing. You just kind of got to roam around, and it's a crapshoot whether or not you're going to the right place and talking to the right person. And, I mean, the Gothic games were all about that, and the hardcore fans loved them for it, but Gothic 4 has kind of taken the Oblivion approach. There's a pretty detailed journal, you get a nice world map, a compass, objective markers you can set, so it's a lot easier to navigate. And on top of that, it's a bit more of a guided experience. Like, the game world is huge, it's vast, but there are, like, pretty clear-cut paths through the world to get from one place to the other. And combat has been simplified, but not completely dumbed down. It almost feels like Fable or Fable 2 for combat. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds. You get, like, a really deep gear-driven, you know, RPG. You get a Diablo-style character customization, like when you level up, you get your 5 skill points to spread amongst little perks and stuff. And you get Fable-style combat, like really cool, fast-moving, you know, nice, well-implemented combat. I'm blown away by how good I'm finding this game, to be honest with you. I'm really enjoying it.
Cool.
And on top of that, it doesn't have, you know, like games like Two Worlds and Risen and all of these other Euro-style open-world RPGs were plagued with bugs, graphical glitches, slow frame rates, and whatnot. Arcane actually feels pretty rock-solid. It looks damn nice. It's a really good port of the PC version. The PC version looks really close to it. And, you know, it's playable. There are no real crazy graphical glitches. There are no huge hiccups, no serious flaws in the game. You know, it feels really smooth. It feels like a fairly polished game.
Oh, very nice.
I was pleased. I was happy. I think I'm at hour 13 now. The only other thing I played, last but certainly not least, was about an hour and a half of Fallout New Vegas.
It's that game has stolen a couple of my buddies, but honestly, I don't think I'm going to do it.
No?
It's not that I didn't like Fallout 3, because I did. I just think that I did enough of that then. I'm not sure if I want to do it again.
I kind of had the same fear. Before I sat down and played it, I was kind of thinking, you know, I did Fallout 3, I did all the DLC, I think I might be done. And New Vegas came, and a few of the guys picked it up, and I was kind of like, yeah, I'll take the rental copy home from work for the weekend and try it out and see what I think of it and all this kind of stuff. And of course, Tuesday morning on release date, I was there buying the special edition. But it's a Christmas gift. I don't get to play it until Christmas, so you know, I'm cool with that. I'm cool. I can get all the Gothic out of my system, and hopefully my import copy of Two Worlds 2 shows up towards the middle or the end of November, so that'll keep me busy for a while. And then after Christmas, I'll get into my Fallout.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it feels great. It feels Fallout 3, you know, and I mean, yeah, your fears or your concerns about it, you know, being done with Fallout, like I said, I felt the same way, and then I sat down and played it, and it was like slipping on an old pair of shoes.
But you know what, in a way I had the same issue with Oblivion, which I loved. I love Oblivion.
Yep.
But I never beat it, or followed the storyline whatsoever.
And, yeah, that's fairly common. I'd say maybe 40% of people who played Oblivion actually finished the storyline.
I have 80 hours in that game, and I never finished the storyline. And I ended up doing the same thing with Fallout. As soon as I got out of, you know, the vault, or whatever it was.
Yep.
And I nuked the first town. I was just kind of like, they were just like, oh, you gotta go to the museum of it. I'm like, no, I don't. And I just took off. And I, like, you know,
instead of going south, I'll go north.
I was like, I really shouldn't be going here. Holy hell. But, you know, I just get my ass kicked everywhere. But, I had a lot of fun just being the nomadic wasteland wandering fellow. The story just, I didn't get it. You know? It didn't grip me. It didn't persuade me to want to keep going down that road.
And you know what? I kind of, like, with Oblivion, I really thought that they did an awesome job of meshing, like, the storyline with the single, like, with the, just the open worldness of it. And like, Oblivion's story, actually, like, if you stuck to the story, it was actually really cool. It was actually, like, a really cool story, and they did a great job of making you feel like a part of it, even though you weren't the central character and stuff. Fallout was a little more meandering. You know, Fallout was a little more, okay, why am I going here now? You know, like, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, oh, I'm looking for my dad, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a fine game, and I enjoyed it, but I don't know, like, how did New Vegas treat you?
I liked it, but I found, like, even with Fallout 3, I did enjoy the storyline. Like, I did have a good time with it. I think partially it's because of Liam Neeson, you know? But but I did have a good time with Fallout 3 storyline. And the end of the game, like, when the end game kicks in, when you've got the Brotherhood of Steel at your back, and you're in, I can't even remember what the thing's name was, Project Justice or Project Liberty or something like this. It was this, I won't say too much, but... You know, like, you're attacking the Washington Memorial with this thing, and there are super mutants everywhere, and the ending hits. I was like, okay, that was awesome. That was fantastic. But now, I can't continue. And then the Broken Steel DLC came out and continued the game again. It was like, oh, yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. I was so happy about that. You know, like by the end of the game, yeah, it had gripped me, and I really wanted to see it through. But... early on, it didn't really have that same push, and Vegas has even less. Vegas is kind of like, okay, now what do? You know, like I watch the opening sequence, I start my game, I've got Colonel Ty from Battlestar Galactica telling me about the hole in my head and stuff like this, and, you know, I start playing the game, I'm like, okay, now what? What do I do now? You know, like, there's no real... You know, with Fallout 3, they kind of give you something that you really, like, they give you something to strive for right from the get-go. You know, like, follow your father, find out what's going on. That's great, but with New Vegas, it's more kind of, who killed me and why? You know? Who shot me in the head, I should say, and why? But it doesn't really have that same... I don't know. It's just kind of... I'm sure it's going to be awesome. I'm sure when I sit down and spend more time with it, I'm sure when I really do start to piece together the clues and stuff, I'm sure it'll be intriguing. And the fact that a few of the guys who created the original Fallout games are involved, and there are elements from Fallout 2 that kind of get picked up, like that's pretty cool. But I guess kind of a wait-and-see process, kind of a wait-and-see thing for sure. I really want to get to the end game, if only because of one of the rumors I heard about it. A certain actor from... a certain 1986 movie about giant aliens makes a cameo at the end of it. A certain Sigourney Weaver movie from 1986 about giant bug alien things. But there's a certain actor in that movie who was always a hoot, and apparently he sort of kind of reprises his role at the end of Fallout New Vegas.
That's alright.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. But I mean, so I'll probably...
This better be who I'm thinking of right now.
It probably is. I will say no more, because I don't want to ruin it for anybody who only just started playing the game. Okay. But, you know, well, I probably already did ruin it if they're not idiots, but, you know.
we're talking about Ghostbusters, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Rick Moranis shows up at the end and asks Sigourney Weaver, did we? You know?
Was he the game... the keymaster or the gatekeeper? I can never remember.
He was the keymaster. Think about it. Think carefully.
I don't get it. What are you talking about?
Do I need to elaborate here?
Explain how that works.
Okay.
Right now.
Birds do it. Bees do it.
Oh, I get it.
Mr. Zookeeper, those monkeys are killing each other.
Yeah, no, it's a... I like New Vegas. I'm happy with it, and I got a feeling I am going to end up losing a goddamn lot of time to that game. But that comes later. That comes after December 25th. Leading into the next little segment, now that we've covered what we've been playing, which, you know, was fun. I'd like to take a moment to celebrate another little anniversary. It seems like 2010 has been... kind of the year of anniversaries. You know, we've had our little Dreamcast celebration way back, and we had our Nintendo soiree last week for the NES.
We also had the 15th anniversary
of the PlayStation 1. Yeah, we did. We had the PlayStation 1 15th anniversary there. And now, on October 26th of 2010, we celebrate the 10th anniversary of the American launch of the PlayStation 2.
Woohoo!
What many would argue would be the greatest home video game console of all time. I don't know if I agree or not, but, you know, I'm contrarian, so, you know, I'm just going to say no for the sake of saying no. Even if I do agree.
I'm going to say no because it was clearly the Amiga.
Oh, my God.
Actually, I've always held out for the Jaguar. It's going to make a comeback.
But, you know, the PlayStation 2, it launched October 26, 2000. It had a pretty outlandish sticker price. In Canada, it was considerably higher than in the United States. We had to pay a whopping $449.99 plus taxes, which is actually, what, $150 less than what the PlayStation 3 cost us at launch?
I think so.
It's pretty crazy when you think about it. But yeah, it was an expensive machine. In the U.S., I believe the average game price was $49 to $59.99, the same as what it is now. But for us, PlayStation 2 in the first 2 years, game prices started at $69.99, averaged $74.99, and went as high as like $89.99. It hit huge. It sold a crap load of systems in its first year. And within 5 years, it had sold over 150 million systems, which is, to this day, still a record.
Yep.
That will likely never be beaten, the way to get the market is divided now. But, you know, it was an amazing machine for its time. It had hardware that was really kind of unwieldy for sure for many programmers, but it was a beast of a machine, and it was capable of some pretty amazing feats if you go by some of the later games in the library. And speaking of which, I'm going to kick it off by asking my friends here, what was your favorite PlayStation 2 game?
Huh.
Well, let me rewind here. Let me start over.
See, this is tough. I came to it late.
Okay, well, we'll start over. We'll rewind. We'll give you some time to think about it, and I'll ask this instead. I'll start with you, John. First PlayStation 2 experience.
My first PlayStation 2 experience?
Yeah.
Was on, it was actually on October the 26th, and I drove a buddy of mine, a guy who in later years we'd actually come to name him Metal Gear, because he was one of the dog tags of Metal Gear Solid 2.
Woohoo!
But as my buddy Andrew in high school, I drove him down to a local game store. He picked up his PlayStation 2 and his copy of Fantavision. I can't really remember why he got the copy of Fantavision.
Where did he get it?
Microplay.
Okay, well, because we had to bundle him with Fantavision.
Yeah. He promptly traded in his copy of Fantavision. And picked up a copy of DOA 2. DOA 2 Hardcore and SSX, despite me trying to explain to him that he should just wait for Tekken Tag Tournament, because Tekken is way better than DOA.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone with brain one will tell you that. And I sat down and for about an hour was, as I usually am with every new console that comes out, you know, you get used to a certain level of a presentation, a graphics and sound. I mean, the PS1 was no slouch. Really, it wasn't. There was some...
For its time, man. For its time, yeah.
For its time, but the first time I ever saw SSX, that just... It literally blew my mind. Unfortunately, I had... That summer...
Bought a Dreamcast.
Bought a Dreamcast.
You sucker.
Used. I might add. Used. I was a huge fighting game fan, and I foolishly invested in a single genre. Okay, I didn't listen to the warnings that, you know, I was buying a game where the 75% of everything that came out for it could be finished in under 18 minutes.
Doesn't matter. It was still
great.
That's
why they called it 18-minute Wheeler. As soon as I saw SSX, the very next day, I got in contact with a couple of buddies of mine at university, asked if anyone wanted to buy my Dreamcast and my ridiculous amount of pirated games.
Oh, Dreamcast.
Yeah. Oh, piracy protection. at all.
You could do that with it. I'm just kidding.
Now, in my defense, none of them were actually games that were available in North America.
There weren't that many games that weren't available in North America.
Now, in my defense, they weren't good games. They weren't games worth paying for.
Well, they were on the Dreamcast. Obviously not. They were either fighting games, arcade games, or high-def PlayStation 1 games.
All right. Listen, you got the only pirated game I owned for the the only game for the Dreamcast I pirated that wasn't available in North America was Guilty Gear X.
Steve, I have four words for you, sir. Okay. Typing of the dead.
Who was writing the Typing of the Dead serialized short story when Pixelvert
first started? That was Eric.
Whatever happened to that? I wanted to see the end, man.
Same thing happened to that asinine comic Dave was doing.
Oh, man, hey, don't go dissing the comic. I missed the comic.
Dude, I'll totally go dissing the comic.
I'd like to see you do better.
I could totally do better.
Well, do it. Put your money where your mouth is.
I don't have the time. With all the Dreamcast games I have to pirate, come on.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah.
John has thrown the gauntlet down. I expect to see the first issue or the first strip in a new Pixel Verdict exclusive webcomic in 2 weeks, John.
Ain't gonna happen. But, no, I got home that day. I took a look at my Dreamcast. I was like, the hell do you want? I don't love you anymore. Love don't live here no more.
You pull an Ike Turner on it?
Yeah, I did. It's only because I loved it, Steve. It's only because I loved
You only hurt the ones you love.
That's right. Mm. And I shipped it off to a hardcore gamer who worked with me at the university newspaper. Sold it for an exorbitant sum of money, and went out and got myself a PS2.
Yay!
Now, when I got my PS2, it was a couple months after that. It was when we were in the midst of the memory card drought.
Oh, January 2001.
I believe my first PS2 games I owned were... Actually, I think the first one I owned was Devil May Cry.
Awesome.
Devil May Cry with no memory card. think about that.
That's bad.
Yeah, I own Devil May Cry and Gradius 3 and 4, and for some reason, Rez.
That was a great game. People like Rez, John.
That was a great people game. Like what are you Rez. Talking about?
yeah, but guys...
Next thing you know, you're going to start dissing the Dreamcast or something.
What did I just tell you about 18-minute relay?
Something. All I remember you talking about was... Captain Enzo.
Yeah. Dissing Captain Enzo.
That's right.
What a jerk.
He was having adventures, John.
In video game land. And they were rather poignant adventures.
With the Ferminator. And,
I don't remember the Ferminator.
The best one was Charlton in Heston, I think. Ben-Hur, and he had his beard was a small intestine.
Oh my god. I must have missed that one.
Dave ever did on his website.
Ow.
Small intestine, that was his name.
Oh god.
But, I'm trying to remember the last couple games I got. Ring of Red, I remember buying that. I remember the big thing, the big joke we have at Ring of Red was one of the characters looked like John Travolta.
Okay.
Like, exactly like...
Eerily.
You know, yeah, exactly like a Japanese cartoon version of John Travolta. He even smoked cigarettes the same way.
As John Travolta. Okay. Yeah. Right on. How about you, Adam? First experience with the PlayStation 2.
I confess that I don't know what John Travolta looks like when he smokes a cigarette.
Oh, I'm not. You know, I wasn't entirely sure on that one either.
You know, he opens the two finger, his middle and pointer finger in a when he puts a cigarette and he opens them up in like this ridiculous wide V, and he basically generally smokes like a douchebag. He smokes like he's performing on a stage, like everyone's watching him smoke.
I bow to your knowledge of John Travolta, sir.
I tell you, man, I'm part of the inner circle.
Oh,
You guys laugh at me now not enjoying the Dreamcast, but when the aliens land and take us up in the mothership and we ascend to a...
We're about to get shut down. The Scientology satellite is about to terminate our internet connections, John. Thank you for that.
Oh, don't worry. Adam's brothers at 4chan will save us.
I thought we already established that Adam didn't have the cred for 4chan. He didn't name his computer something cool.
I don't have the 4chan.
He just finished naming that laptop Dreamcast.
4chan terrifies me beyond all rational thought. I mean, I'm happy that they exist, but it's a bad place.
It is a dark place.
It's a dark place. Men dare not tread
down. That is the black speak of 4chan. I will not dare.
One does not simply walk into 4chan.
I mean, if I ever, you know,
the very air you breathe is a poisonous meme.
I mean, I credit where credit's due. Every good meme has sprung out of there, along with, like, you know, 13-year-old girls conned into taking their shirts off, and then their fathers yelling about it.
So yeah, PlayStation 2, Adam.
Yeah. See, here's the weird thing about the PlayStation 2. I don't actually have a lot of. I didn't buy one when it came out.
No?
Okay. I couldn't find one, and I couldn't afford one.
I understand.
And I was doggedly sticking with the Dreamcast. Because I put my money there, so...
You didn't pull an Ike Turner.
He hitched his pony to Sega's wagon.
I did, and I rode it, you know, there, to the end.
For as long and hard as you could.
But the end was 3 months later.
I was still playing Skies of Arcadia, thank you very much.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So anyway.
So when you do you remember the first time you ever actually, like, were impressed, or the first time you ever had a hands-on with the PlayStation 2?
I completely admit to being oblivious, and it was weird because there was this, as my interest with the Dreamcast faded, I kind of went through a dry video game spell.
Okay.
Where I wasn't really consoling, and I wasn't really PC gaming, I wasn't really doing anything. Until I ended up in a little secondhand video game shop, and they had some foolish fool had sold their PlayStation 2, and they were selling it for like $100, which at like the time was ridiculous. And I later found out why, because it barely worked, and it was like half disassembled. Some foolish person had like tried to put a mod chip in it and
failed.
Oh no! So it was like. It had been opened, and, like, the drive bay was disassembled and everything, and it worked.
And there was a fuel tank on the back of it. Yeah.
Mr. Fusion, I put garbage in it, you know, it was great. I mean, it worked, and I bought, you know, at that time I got a couple low-end games, but, you know, it's... The first game I really remember being, like, really taken in by, unless you're going to talk about, like, Katamari, which was a riot, but I guess not, was probably Final Fantasy X.
Right on.
That one kind of grabbed me pretty good.
Final Fantasy X was a pretty amazingly impressive game.
Yeah, and it was like the PlayStation 2 was all right. I was kind of like, yeah, you know, I got a Dreamcast, you know, fighting games, whatever. It wasn't too much that was really grabbing me.
Yeah.
I remember seeing somebody playing like Burnout, and I was thinking, well, that was kind of cool, but not really a car driving guy.
I understand.
But I remember playing Final Fantasy X, and I was just like, wow, I haven't played a game like this anywhere else. This was really cool.
Oh, of course, I was working at a video game retailer when, not like now where I work in this bizarre, twisted, bastardized offspring of video game rental and movie rental store, but it was just a hardcore video game store, and it was at a time when we were like pretty much the only show in town, and the PlayStation 2 launch
before
being
the dark times,
before the dark times, before the empire. But you know, the PlayStation 2. I remember we started getting games a week before the system launch, and I was a recent convert. I had a good, probably a strong, solid 2 years with the PlayStation 1 before I'd I'd built up to that point where I considered myself a gamer again, you know, like I'd finally amassed something of a collection. I had about 70 or 80 games, and, you know, I was really enjoying my time with the PlayStation 1, and the Dreamcast came out, and I was like, yeah, it's kind of cool. I kind of like it. We had an imported Dreamcast from Japan, and I played a bit of that, and, like, you know, it was, yeah, this is pretty neat. But I'm going to wait and see what Sony does. And, of course, the PlayStation 2 came out, the hype train, the stories, the screenshots and movies and all this stuff. And when the games hit, I started, like, looking at the backs of the cases and stuff. And even, like, you know, stuff that's really not fondly remembered now, stuff that people kind of, I won't say they bitch and moan about, but they don't even really acknowledge the existence of anymore. Stuff like Midnight Club and Smuggler's Run, the original Time Splitters.
Oh, Smuggler's Run.
You know, like, all of this stuff, man, when these games came out at the time, like, at that point in time, there was nothing else like them, you know? Like, I mean, it looked phenomenal. Like, I mean, if you're used to the Dreamcast, this stuff was like, wow. And I remember, you know, day one we got, I think it was 8 or 10 of these giant cardboard boxes, and each one had 4 PlayStation 2 systems in it. And the very first box that got opened, the very first bit of tape that got ripped, which was probably, I think, 4 days before launch, the first big shiny blue foil box that came out went right into the trunk of my car. And in that week, I had also picked up, I think, 7 games, 7 launch titles, a memory card, the DVD remote, you know, like, I was mega excited. I was really, really excited. And we pumped it something sick. We pumped the PlayStation 2 like crazy. Got some stuff from Sony for the launch. We did, like, the whole midnight launch thing. We had 2 big 27-inch TVs hooked up with SSX running on one and Dead or Alive 2 running on the other one. The store was packed with people. You know, it was a really smooth launch for us, and it was just, the excitement was there, man. Like, people were looking at it and going just like, wow, you know, this is so cool. And, I mean, I read from then on, that was it, and, I mean, I was sold. That's like, I mean, if the PlayStation 1 kind of got me back into it as a hobby, the PlayStation 2 really kind of totally dominated for me. It was just like, okay, yeah, that's it. I'm a gamer now, you know? I'm buying a $500 console at launch with 7 games. I am sick in the head. You know,
it was also a DVD player,
and that's the other thing. I mean, you know, my wife had bought a DVD player the summer before. Well, she was then, of course, my girlfriend, and we'd only been together, I think, for 2 months, and she had bought a DVD player, and we both started buying DVDs. And of course, when the PlayStation 2 came out, it was like, okay, now I have my DVD player at home, and a nice receiver that does 5.1 digital sound. So it's like, okay, now it's time to start buying DVDs, baby. You know.
And thus the courtship began.
Yeah, I mean, like, within 3 months, I had my 100th DVD purchase was Gladiator, which I think came out in October, you know?
So that was, like, my first DVD, you bastard. That was actually the first DVD I ever got.
I actually sold the first DVD I ever bought last week. It kind of hurt. I traded it in for $1 in store credit.
Whoa.
It was Three Kings.
Three Kings? That was a good movie. That was why are we getting rid of Three Kings?
I'm rebuying it on Blue.
Yeah, okay.
I just did my once or twice a year culling and picked about 30 or 40 movies and dumped them.
Well, all right then. Fair enough.
And that was supposed to be my Apocalypse Now purchase, but Apocalypse Now was recalled in Canada because the gods hate me. It was sad, but I digress.
Well, dude, they, there's a scene in that movie where they speak French, so there better be French on the package.
But no, it's you know, I got my PlayStation 2 right away. I remember bringing it home. I wasn't even working the day they came in. I was off, and one of the old guys used to work with us called me up and was like, "Yeah, Steve, we just got a bunch of boxes, and do you want to come in and open this shit?" And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, I'll be there in 10 minutes." And I showed up because, I mean, even back then, I was the manager in there, so it was kind of like, no one else opened any shipments, or, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll be there, you know. I came in and opened it up, and the young guy was working, was like, you're more excited than I am, this is retarded, you know. But yeah, I got home, I hooked it up, and the next day, you know, I'd opened all 7 of the games. I'd spent an inordinate amount of time with them. A really good buddy of mine, Jeff, was in that night, and we poured through everything, and, you know, we had a ball with it. We thought it was a fantastic machine, and, I mean, it was no time later he was buying one, and I think pretty much everybody and their dog bought one. Saddam Hussein bought 200 of these things to give to his chiefs of staff, and the U.S. thought he was building guided missiles out of them, you know? Like,
I remember a story about, like, trucks being hijacked.
Yeah, trucks.
Full of, like, PlayStation 2s.
Yeah, trucks being hijacked. There was one, I think it might have been Great Britain. It got all messed up because the British government classified the processor as a supercomputer, so they were going to charge an extra tax on it or something. You know?
Britain.
The stories around the PlayStation 2 were retarded. George Lucas coming out and saying, you know, like, it can do in real time what it takes us hours to do for special effects in movies. And I mean, like, yeah, there was hype around other system launches, but man, I don't think I've ever seen a system launch with as much hype as the PlayStation 2. That was just ridiculous. And I mean, it could be argued that in that first year, the first 7 or 8 months, whether or not it lived up to it, there were some damn good games in that launch lineup. You know, there was some great stuff. Dead or Alive 2 Hardcore was awesome. SSX was awesome. As much as it's not fondly remembered now, Midnight Club was an awesome little addictive game. You know, like, there was some great stuff there. But, I mean, it was 2001, of course, when the system really kind of showed its true colors and just, I mean, Final Fantasy X, Metal Gear Solid 2, Ico, Devil May Cry, Grand Theft Auto 3. That year was, I mean, to this day, a lot of people consider 2001 to be the single best year in gaming history. I mean, you know, you had the Xbox and GameCube launches, you had Halo, you had Luigi's Mansion, yay, you know, but like, It was, I mean, the PlayStation 2, for 2001 and 2002, that system just completely and utterly dominated. And because of the software that was on it, it deserved to, you know? Like, and even now, I mean, the amount of software available for that machine, man, is just, it's mind-boggling how many individual games are out there for the PlayStation 2. I think it even beat the PlayStation 1's record, and that was somewhere around 6,000, you know? So it is ridiculous. It really is, you know? I mean, I look at my shelf, I see, you know, 100 PlayStation 3 games, I see 90-odd Xbox 360 games, I see over 200 PlayStation 2 games, you know, it is ridiculous.
Scary.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. That machine is and was a powerhouse, and what's even more incredible about it for me is there's still stuff that holds up amazingly well on that machine, you know, Shadow of the Colossus, Metal Gear Solid 3, Metal Gear Solid 2, Ico, Final Fantasy X, Final Fantasy XII, like, there's so much stuff that still, like, has aged extremely well and still plays really well and still looks damn good.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. So what do you think, guys? Favorite games on PlayStation 2? Let's try that again. Adam, did you think of anything?
Metal Gear Solids, two of them.
Yeah?
Two and three.
Two and three?
Final Fantasy X. The first Katamari game was pretty fun. I have a soft spot for that kind of irreverent game.
You know, I know, not the finest of things, but it was there's something about it. You know?
Oh, Katamari has its fans, and it deserves them.
It was goofy enough that I quite took to it.
It was pretty cool.
It was one of those, like, rare I can play this with my wife kind of games.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I you know, I don't have a hardcore gaming wife, unfortunately. So when I can get her to play a game, it's pretty nice.
Yeah. I did for a little while, but it didn't last.
The, there was a Dragon's Quest game that was pretty good.
Dragon Quest VIII?
Dragon's Quest VIII.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, I put a lot of time into that.
Yeah, Dragon Warrior VIII was pretty awesome.
Dragon Warrior VIII. Are we doing this again? Can we already have this conversation?
Well, at least it gives him an excuse to break out that Ultimate Warrior picture from Photoshop again.
And I guess it's worth mentioning, like, Guitar Hero 2, I suppose.
Guitar Hero 2 was pretty awesome, yeah.
That was the first, you know, guitar game I bought.
And a lot of people, you know, like, they think about all the Guitar Heroes and Rock Band and all of that stuff now, and people don't really realize that madness actually started on the PlayStation 2.
That was the first one.
A fairly humble start, too.
It was, and I mean, I recall, like, you know, when Guitar Hero launched, nobody really knew what the hell it was, but I mean, myself and John, I think we got the only two that EB brought in, didn't we?
We did.
And I mean, Christmas night.
Actually, there were three.
Oh, okay, okay.
I bought one. You bought one.
Yeah.
And then the manager of the store was like, "What's all this about?" And then he bought.
What's all this thing?
Yeah, and I mean, we couldn't even get it. Our supplier didn't even carry it. And, I mean, we're talking about the largest supplier in Canada. You know?
Yeah, dude. I mean, this was before MTV Games and EA and
Activision.
And that is a Red Octane release.
Yeah, it was actually distributed by Red Octane, who had only, had only done DDR clones.
I remember going to the store to buy it with the guitar, and it was that wonderful period where 50% of the store's merchandise wasn't devoted to guitar peripherals.
Yeah, yeah.
It still had games in like regular sized boxes.
Yep.
Yeah.
I could turn around without fearing that I was going to knock over a giant fortress built out of DJ Hero boxes.
They make great forts.
They do. They really do. The best, though, is the Rock Band 2 special editions with the drum set and everything. You can really build a nice castle out of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's... I'm pretty happy with those. Those hit the good mark for me.
How about you, John? Favorite game, PlayStation 2?
Wow. That is a question.
That's a tough one. I know.
That is a powerful guy. Especially, I mean, we're looking at here. I think what made the PS2 such a great system for me was not only did it have, I mean, the PS2 had a great collection of first-party titles.
Yep, it did.
I mean, Sony was a powerhouse there. You know, you had the Gran Turismo franchise. That had two releases.
Yep.
During the PS2. You know, there was a Twisted Metal game. They launched God of War on PS2. But as good as that first-party collection was, and I'd like Microsoft and Nintendo to take note here, dwarfed completely by the wonderful third-party releases.
Yeah. There was some great
and,
stuff.
I mean, yeah, back in those days, too, even after the Xbox and the GameCube came out, for the first little while, if you wanted to play this great new release, it was coming on PS2 first.
Yep. I mean, even for a time, you know, like, it kind of kicked off the console war, which I hate. I really hate. But even for a while, you know, the original Xbox, like, a lot of the times, stuff that was coming out for the three platforms, the PlayStation 2 version was generally considered, you know, the one to buy.
I don't know if I can, really say I had a favorite game on the PS2.
Yep.
I mean, I got my own, like, I've got stuff that I played the hell out of, like, beyond what any sane person would play with a game. You know, you crack everything open in it, and you still go back for more. And, the games like that, like, my copy of Tekken 5, dude, we broke the goddamn arcade stick. That came
with that game. You know, Tekken 5 was pretty amazing.
Yeah, the toughest arcade stick known to man, and we broke it.
Yep.
But you know, my GTA 3, GTA Vice City. You know, I must have put close to 40 hours into Vice City that without even touching the story mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if I've ever brought this up on Blast Processing before. The run, my run from Vice City. Get far into across on one of the islands. Get to the airport.
Yes, you have brought this up before.
Get your wanted reading as far as you can. I think by blowing up a helicopter at the airport. And then steal the baggage carrier. And drive back to your hotel at the start of the game. And the only radio station you're allowed to listen to is Esperanza.
It's like my commute to work.
Awesome.
Adam's commute to work. In the back of a pickup.
You ever tried to
that
commute to work?
That is the most horrible thing we've ever said.
In the GTA? Come on. It's pretty bad.
But, no, I mean, I liked Vice City a lot more than San Andreas. I did. I thought, you know, San Andreas was too much of a good thing.
You'll never hear me diss San Andreas. I thought San Andreas was pretty brilliant. But
it was a great game, man, but I mean, the environment was huge, and that first few hours dealing with Big Smoke and, the other guy, the two fellas who betray you. The first couple hours, yeah?
John, I'm with you, actually. Vice City.
Vice City?
Yeah.
Yeah, San Andreas was a great game, no doubt. But, Vice City. I had more fun with that one, I think.
But,
I prefer 3. GTA 3 is my...
See, but I couldn't get my hands on GTA 3 because... I mean, nobody expected GTA 3 to be the Omega hit that it became.
Man, GTA 3, I thought it was hilarious. I think it was 15 copies of Grand Theft Auto 3, which for us at the time was kind of, it wasn't high, but it was like mid, you know, like whatever.
I mean, and, who was Rockstar back then?
Yeah, and the owner was kind of like, do you know something I don't? And I was like, just you wait, just you wait. And as soon as the reviews hit, it was gone. It could not be got. You know, like that was it. It was history. And I remember I grabbed my copy. I was mega excited. I'd read about the first part of the game and how like the game doesn't even open with a start button. Like, what the hell? You just put it in and you're right into the game. That was like, whoa, you're messing with my reality here. And it was just so much about presentation, so much about storyline and all of that kind of stuff. And I remember buying it. And again, my buddy Jeff, who was like my PlayStation 2 homeboy, like we every week we'd take every new release rental that came into the store. We'd come back to my place. We'd sit down. We'd have our game night. You know? And I took Grand Theft Auto 3 home that night, and he's like, yeah, dude, I don't know if I want to buy it or not. Put my copy aside for me, and I'll try yours tonight. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure, no sweat. You know, I'm definitely buying it, whatever. I brought it home, and he showed up 2 or 3 hours later, and here's me in an ambulance in the pouring rain with, like, the soundtrack from Scarface blaring, and he looks at the screen, and he's like, what the F is going on, you know? But, like, that game was just such a creative step forward, man, for games in general. And, I mean, yeah, it's been imitated so much ever since. And as amazing as GTA 4 was, it was more of like, you know, evolution instead of revolution, whereas GTA 3 was just like, holy cow, what have you done with video games, you know?
Well, that GTA 3 to me was, that was the first, you know, we always hear about the next-gen gaming.
Yeah.
The next-gen game to come out. When the PS2 hit, when that generation started, that console generation started, GTA 3 was the jump to next-gen.
Yeah.
But nothing I mean, like it had ever been there before.
Yeah, I mean, there's other
unless
stuff.
You were, unless you were a PC gamer. then you need to worry about PlayStation 2. You know, I was still playing Grand Theft Auto 2.
But right. that wasn't the same at all.
Not even a little bit.
Getting back like on a topic, totally different game. Getting back on topic, though, I think the two games I played the most out of on my PS3 were... I was going to say Prince of Persia, but I think I put more time in Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm.
I really did. Man, I can remember picking up Shadow of the Colossus, and Steve's going to deny this, but I can still remember the day that came out. I called him from my work. I worked for a certain evil gaming conglomerate.
Boo hiss.
At this period. And I called him up. I said, dude, we got in our Shadow of the Colossus. He said, I don't know if I'm going to pick that one up, John. It doesn't seem like something I'd play very much of. I think I'm going to get the Warriors instead.
But what did I do? I bought both.
You bought both. did the Warriors get played?
It did, no. But not until I was done with Shadow of the Colossus.
Not that week.
I liked the Warriors.
I did, too. I thought it was a great game. But, I mean, I was one of five people I knew who was familiar with the movie, too.
Well, yeah.
Shadow of the Colossus turned a friend of mine's wife... You know, a woman who read romance novels and enjoyed movies about horses and vampires and Johnny Depp, who couldn't get her to pick up a game controller if she wasn't, you know, playing the original Tomb Raider, which was the only game she owned. And Shadow of the Colossus, my copy got loaned out. I didn't see it for 6 months. And then when I got it back, it was because she had finally bought her own copy. between that and I gotta do this in shadow because this was really the bonding moment between Beth when she was my girlfriend, and this was the game that, you know, kind of sank us as a couple, or not sank us, sorry, cemented us as a couple.
Wait a minute, hold on a second.
I'm sorry, Elizabeth. I love you, baby.
I love you, Miss Elizabeth.
I see those eyes, Hulk Hogan.
Anyway.
The game that really cemented us as a couple was the over 100 hours we pumped into Burnout 3.
Oh, God.
Okay. I can talk about, you know, the next-gen experience of Grand Theft Auto. I can talk about how much I love Prince of Persia, how much I love Shadow of the Colossus. My love for all that is not near as powerful as when I boil down the simple joy of launching a car into a crash junction at 200 miles an hour.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That's the PS2 game I played the most out of.
For me, Well, I mean, like Adam said, the Metal Gear Solids, Metal Gear Solid 2, Metal Gear Solid 3, both of those games were just experiences where I could not stop until I was done. You know, like, I pick up the controller, I started playing, sleep, I can sleep when I'm dead.
Dude, I remember finishing Snake Eater and biting on my fingernails for 24 hours because I wanted to talk about the ending.
And I hadn't finished it yet because I was working.
You hadn't finished it yet.
I was working 2 12-hour days in a row.
And as soon as he finished it later that night, the phone rings. Oh, my God! Oh, my God! I was crying!
But it was, Snake Eater, Sons of Liberty, amazing, amazing games. I know it's trendy to bash Sons of Liberty, but that game was genius. That game was
awesome.
Man,
who bashes that?
All people, oh, riding this, riding that, riding's a pansy. Man, like, screw you guys. That was the most awesome bait and switch I have ever seen. You know? That was
a lot of people too. A lot of people never pick up on this this little subtle thing about the game. Even though you're playing as Raiden,
Snake is still the main character.
The main character is the story is still all about Snake.
Yep.
You know, the guys had this all planned perfectly, except for one thing. They did not expect Solid Snake to be on that oil.
Well, I mean, everybody thought he was dead. You know, like, after that cutscene with the tanker, when the tanker goes down and stuff, man, I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then, like, you know, the game keeps going, and I'm like, what's going on now? What's going on here? And you know, you see Raiden, and it's just like, and I thought Raiden's design and stuff was really damn cool. I thought he was a pretty cool-looking character, you know, but, I mean, that's it. Different strokes for different strokes, right? Different folks, whatever, but, you know, it's, I don't know, Metal Gear Solid 2, I just, to me, that was the game of the year that year for me, and 2001 was a goddamn stellar year for games. Of course, the aforementioned Grand Theft Auto 3, I love the hell out of Grand Theft Auto 3, and I've enjoyed every Grand Theft Auto that's come since. I don't care what anybody says, you know? It's one of those things where it's become so popular that it's trendy and cool to bash it or whatever, and any magazine that gave GTA 4 a 10 out of 10 is retarded, and whatever else people want to get on with, it's all bullshit. The games are amazing. Deal with it. You know, it's like people who bash on Halo or people who bash on Call of Duty. No, I don't like Call of Duty, but I recognize, you know? I recognize the skill that goes into the multiplayer in that game. I recognize what these guys are trying to accomplish. I may not agree with it, but I got to appreciate it. And GTA is, you know, I mean, that game is brilliance in game design. Like, DMA design now, Rockstar North, whatever, you know, these guys wrote the textbook on modern game design, you know? And it, Grand Theft Auto 3 was such a huge part of it. Grand Theft Auto 3 was the blueprint, you know, for the next 5 years worth of games. Final Fantasy X, amazing, amazing game. Storyline was incredible. I was a little disappointed at how linear it was, but when it's telling you a story that's so good, you don't really notice. You know, it was one of those things that it propelled me forward so strongly that I didn't really give a shit about not being able to roam around, not being able to see a store every now and again that I could refresh my cure potions or whatever, you know? Like, it didn't bother me. I couldn't have cared less. I didn't mind that there was no overworld map because the game was just so captivatingly gorgeous and the world that it was set in was so beautifully realized, which, of course, leads me to Final Fantasy XII, which I think is about the most perfect game they have ever released. I think Final Fantasy XII is the epitome of that series. I think it's, you know, it had that modern, slightly more modernized gameplay design to it, you know, the more, I guess, MMO-inspired nature of the combat and all that kind of stuff, but just the story that it told was an awesome, you know, a little more accessible than the crazy, quirky Japanese-ness that they get on with in some of the other Final Fantasy games, but at the same time, you know, it had that epic feel, and had these great characters that pulled you in, it had this beautiful graphics engine, again, the combat, just every
huge, fully realized world.
Yeah, I mean, everything about that game just felt like, yeah, it took 5 years to develop, and it showed. You know, that game was just so incredibly deep and just welcoming. You know, it's the kind of game that just, it wanted you to just pick up the controller and explore. And when I was playing Final Fantasy XI, when I spent the 2 years with Final Fantasy XI that I did, I always thought, man, this would be awesome if they could put some scripted elements in there and turn it into a single-player game, because it's just so freaking huge. And 12 is essentially what they did. You know, they took enough to flesh it out, build on 11's gameplay, and turn it into an awesome single-player game. And it is, you know, one of my favorite games on the machine. The other one, like the big one, of course, similar to John, I gotta go Shadow of the Colossus on that one.
Yeah.
You know, Shadow of the Colossus was just, wow. Like, I mean, three of us sat down and went through that game. It was myself, my buddy Kev, and my buddy Mark. And we sat down and we went boss for boss. You know, we each took a Colossus. And, you know, the end of the game when the bridge is collapsing underneath you and Argo plummets seemingly to his doom, Woolridge was crying. Woolridge had tears in his eyes. And it was just like, you know, the only reason me and Mark didn't is because we were manly men. We're like, I'm too manly to cry. I'm not going to do it, you know? But, like, that game
well,
was...
Well, no. You were too manly to cry, and Mark's a cyborg.
Yeah, Mark's a robot. I forgot.
He doesn't have to. He knows now why you cry.
Yeah.
But it's something he can never do.
But Shadow of the Colossus was just... It was one of those games, man, that was just... Some of the scenes...
Completely deserving of all the love it gets.
Yeah, some of the scenery and stuff. Like, some of the fights I recall, the big giant... floating sandworm in the desert where you got to take out the big gas bags underneath it. I mean, you're on a horse trying to jump from your horse to the little side wing hanging off this thing while it's down carving through sand, and there's dust and wind everywhere, and it's just like, holy crap. It's one of those moments of in gaming where you're like, I can't believe I'm doing this right now, and I can't believe how awesome it feels.
The big armored guy in the Badlands, when he finally comes toward you and it starts the electrical storm and it starts raining and everything.
Yeah, like it's just such a beautiful game, and I, for one, cannot wait to play it again in high def in March.
Whenever I do anything that requires any feat of strength, I hear the Wander's theme from that start playing in my head.
Yeah, it's just...
The place when he finally gets a grip on one of them.
Yeah, it is a near... flawless piece of execution. And on top of that, it showed that, like, system that at that point in time was starting to really get aged. I mean, you know, the Xbox 360 was, I think it was right around the corner at that point. And, you know, next...
It's about a month away, actually.
Yeah, next-gen video cards were on the go. People were talking about, you know, pixel shading and high dynamic range lighting and all of these new fancy tricks. And these guys, these damn wizards at Team ICO... managed to pull this shit off on 5-year-old hardware. You know, like, they managed to implement high dynamic range lighting, they managed to implement bump mapping, fur shaders, you know, like, all of this stuff that was really what was considered next-gen tech was up and running on a PlayStation 2 console, you know, and, like, I mean, at the time, I recall, I think it was a British site, had some kind of a technical interview with all of the guy, or the creator, the director, or whatever, of Shadow of the Colossus, and he was talking about how they managed to fudge all of these crazy high-tech graphical... methods on the PlayStation 2's hardware. And of course, it was all cheats, it was all cheating, but just the fact that they did it, the fact that they managed to pull it off.
You know what he should have done in that interview when he asked him how he did it?
Black magic.
He should have just no, man, he should have just done the Hulk Hogan flex and walked out.
No, I mean, the game is a beautiful game, and again, cannot wait to play this game in high def. I think it's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, me either.
And locked at 30 frames per second. Like, that to me is just like, wow. Just release it as a standalone PS3 game. No one's going to notice. And I do have to give honorable mention to one other game. Another RPG. Suikoden 3.
Go, Ninja. Go, Ninja. Go.
Interesting. Number 3, eh?
Suikoden 3. There's something about the way that storyline was told, how you had three parallel characters, and... You experience the opening events of the game from three different perspectives, and they change drastically, you know, like it was... But when everything started to kind of come together, it was so brilliant how it all overlapped. And I really...
It was also really the last time that series was quality.
I can't say it was the last time it was quality, but it was the last time it was exceptional. Yeah. You know, it was the last time it was a trendsetter instead of kind of following the rest of the pack. Like, Suikoden 5, I mean, or Suikoden 4, sorry, was absolute rubbish. But Suikoden 5 was kind of a good return to form, but it never really approached the highs of 3. 3 was just... I mean, 3 was... I put 3 up there with, you know, like, the new Castlevania in regards to the older games, or, like, Metal Gear Solid in regards to the older Metal Gears. It was, you know, it was a well-loved but cult-following franchise on PlayStation 1 that got a little bit of love on PS2, you know?
I played 3, but I don't remember much about it. Like, 1 and 2 have that spot in my heart.
One and 2 were great games, don't get me wrong. I mean, 1 and 2 were phenomenal games, but 3 for me was kind of like, you know, if the series was going to evolve on PlayStation 2, that was the evolution, you know? Suikoden 3 was kind of like, yeah, okay, this is a PlayStation 2 version of Suikoden, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Suikoden 4 was just like, what am I playing, you know?
Yeah.
Why is the cat from Richard Scarry's Busy Town on the ship?
And And why does the ocean look so bad? Why are the character designs
giant
so,
enemy crab?
Why are character designs so horrible? Why am I not doing anything? Why am I just wandering aimlessly for 7.5 hours? You know, it was horrible. Whereas Sekoden 3's story was really tight, really focused, really well told. The central character, I can't remember her name, the blonde-headed girl with the armor, she was kind of like a Joan of Arc type of...
Chris.
Yeah, she was a fantastic character. She was a really cool central character and stuff. So, you know, I dug my Sekoden 3.
If Steve still had hair, he'd dye it like the Grasslands guy from Sekoden 3.
I still have some hair, damn it.
Not enough to do that.
I got more than you.
You keep dreaming that.
On that
you go
note,
to bed now. You wipe a tear from your eye and you think about my gingery, gorgeous hair.
Your flowing locks. Adam's like, yeah, well, I got more hair than both of you. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know about that. Time is making a fool of my hair.
Best thing is, since we're recording this, is we actually have that sound Steve just made. So
what sound is that?
Yeah.
On that note, you guys have been listening to Pixel Verdict. We have wasted approximately an hour and a half of your life. Thanks for joining us. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, please address them to the appropriate members. You can find those people on the pixelverdict.com site under our comments section, where you can leave some comments. You can go to dvdverdict.com, hit up the Pixel Verdict section of the forums over there, and you can, you know, chat away to your heart's content. Let us know what you thought of the PlayStation 2. Let us know how you feel the system is. I mean, I know when something gets really crazy successful, there's always a little bit of backlash. So, you know, some of you PS2 haters out there, let us know how much you hate the PS2 and why. Let us know why the Xbox was so much better. Or, heaven forbid, why the GameCube was so much better.
I'd love to hear that argument.
But yeah, we'll be back next week. I'm sure you can catch us at the usual time and place when you'll hear Adam say,
I said, don't let your dick run your life.
We are out of here.